This is a HeadGum Original.
I don't think this has any purpose, but just to like mess with our editor, let's do a clap.
Okay.
Three, two one.
He's going to hate us. He's absolutely going to hate us for that.
Editors hate this one thing.
And I think it helps. I don't know.
Welcome back to another episode of Punch Up the Jam. We're so excited to be talking about one of our favorite Diana Ross songs this week with Gabby Dunn.
Let's punch it.
I was delighted. I was delicious when Gabby and I were emailing about what song to do on this week's episode. And they suggested that we do Upside Down by Diana Ross, one of my favorite songs to stare at quizzically because it's so problematic. But first I want to welcome Gabby to the pod.
Hi.
They are an extremely distinguished podcaster in their own right. Gabby is the host of Bad With Money for 7, 8 seasons, going on 200 seasons of Bad With Money.
Nine seasons now. Nine seasons. I do Bad With Money. I do a show called Just Between Us, but Bad With Money is in its 9th season
right now.
It's a finance podcast about finances and feelings, and we don't...
And I'm not ashamed to toot your horn and say that it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest... consumer-oriented finance podcasts. It's funny, it's relatable, and extremely useful.
Thank you.
And if you don't like podcasts, which frankly would be weird because you're listening to our podcast, Gabby wrote a great book, Bad With Money, which I think that's the last time I saw you, Gabby. I was buying a copy at the Strand. You had a very funny event there at the Strand. That was fun.
Yeah, I wrote the Bad With Money book as well. You can check that out. For some reason I'm not a financial expert in any way, but I have spent 9 seasons asking silly questions so that you don't have to.
Your strength as an advocate.
You never said you're an expert. The podcast is not called Good With Money, you know?
No, it is not.
That's the point.
And the book is basically like a financial memoir where it's like, you know, which is a genre, who knew? That's like, look, man, here's what I learned because they don't teach us this stuff. And it's on purpose to keep us from economic mobility. Yay.
Now, are you a longtime Diana Ross fan, or is this a recent mm-hmm. this is a recent pickup in your repertory?
My mom is a huge Diana Ross fan. Huge. Like, she tells me stories about when she was a little girl singing into her hairbrush in her room, the Supremes. Sure. And so she's like a huge Diana Ross fan. So we always knew, I mean, like literally, I remember in 6th grade we went to Vegas and we saw like a Diana Ross impersonator show for her. Like it was what's not to love when you're a kid and you see her on TV? She's got the hair, she's got the outfits. Like, I mean, it's truly like just so glamorous looking and
she
so
is
wonderful.
Fully herself, so elegant, so glamorous.
So elegant. I sent Evan a video of her singing this song with Boy George.
And just like she's glamorous in like 8 different eras. You look at her with the Temptations and she has like the mm-hmm. perfect Motown dresses on with like the curls.
Yeah, the Supremes.
Those really long skinny microphones. And then like, but then in the 70s, she's wearing like these amazing outfits on her album covers. And then by the time this album hits.
Yeah, she's just like an icon. And she's like still making music and still, I mean, it's just like she's larger than life, you know? So I very much like her, and this song, I very much like this song. And then slowly, as I started to get to know music more, as when I realized the Chic was involved, and I got to understand more about like the production side of it, and I'm like a huge Nile Rodgers fan, so it just like all came together.
This is we're so amped that you picked this song. It's our first Diana Ross song on the pod, and we're just amped out of our heads.
I hope it's the first of hundreds of Diana Ross songs.
Like one of my other ones that we didn't choose was After Midnight by Eric Clapton, because he says, after midnight, we're going to shake a tambourine. And I'm sort of like, you know, what is after midnight about that? But basically, the song is like very apologist to a terrible boyfriend. The guys from Chic worked on it with her.
Yes, that's right.
And initially, she was like, I want it to be about my career being turned upside down, I think is what I read. And then they said, okay, well, let's make it about a boy. But the song is not a love song.
No. It's a Stockholm Syndrome song.
Yeah.
You said it that the two of the guys from Chic like produced and wrote this album. And they sat down with her for like a long, like supposedly days-long interview. Mm-hmm. And I love that they went away and were like, okay, she wants to turn her career upside down. That's such like a strong emotional core. You know, she's putting out this album when she's like in her late 30s. Mm-hmm. She's been a star since she was in her teens, like from like a Motown star from Detroit. Mm-hmm. But I just love the instinct to be like, all right, we have this strong emotional core, but let's just make it about a boy.
A terrible boy. So the one line, I don't want to spoiler alert everybody, but the one line that Evan and I talked about was, instinctively, I say to thee, I'm aware that you're cheating.
Let's get into it. I want to just say at the outset that one reason I love this song is that it absolutely, unquestionably slaps so hard in the face.
It's very good.
It has been sampled 30 umpteen times in like 90s hip hop and since then, because the beat goes so hard and yet the lyrics are so problematic.
I went through a huge disco phase during the pandemic, like got very, very into disco, read a lot of books. And my mom is a huge Diana Ross fan, so I always knew about Diana Ross, and I knew she was like, you know, a queen. And then I started getting really into disco, and a lot of the songs are these like amazing beats, amazing vocals, like these women like Donna Summer and like all these, you know, even like a lot of Tina Turner's disco stuff, like all of it is like incredible. And I read like 3 Tina Turner biographies. Like I really go ham when I get in. And then like the lyrics are always sus, a little sus.
They were from a different time, not just musically, but culturally.
The thing about the lyric about instinctively knowing that he's cheating, this is the disco era. It could just be like, you're running around, I'm running around. Like, we're having a wild time. It's the 70s. But like, no, he's cheating. But she's still just okay with
it. We can start at the beginning. It's written very like a Shakespearean sonnet. In some ways,
that's incredibly generous. Let's evaluate that claim.
Oh, that rhythm guitar at the top, the chicka chicka.
Very Nile Rodgers.
Okay, I will pause right here because thus far we have zero questions. Only statements, incredibly powerful statements of music that say emphatically, get on the dance floor. It's just furious. The beat goes so hard. And let's recap for everybody listening, since we're just talking about the members of Chic as if these are all household names. But we're talking about the band Chic that they have hits like La Freak and Good Times from the 70s. And
you guys were talking about...
They did the Daft Punk song Get Lucky, if you guys remember.
Yes, 40 years later. I
mean, you guys were talking about this being one of the most sampled songs of all time, but the only songs that are more sampled than this song are other Chic songs. Because,
Chic was incredible, and they faced a lot of bullshit because they were... Like, disco got co-opted by white people, and I know that Chic specifically were, like, some of the top disco artists, and then got, like, banned from Studio 54, like, weren't allowed in because they were black. Like, it was, like, a real, like, shitty time, and one of the reasons that I got very into disco during the pandemic was because it was seen as black and gay music, and so people hated on it, and there was, like, Disco Demolition Night, where these rock DJs were like, we hate disco, but, like, what I came to realize is that, like, a lot of the simmering sort of hatred towards disco was actually just homophobia and racism.
Yeah.
So then I just started getting super into the music. And basically, Chic are, like, icons, and they do not get their due at all.
Yes, although the one place where they do get their due is with their extended career in writing. Like, these two guys, especially yes. Nile Rodgers, the guitarist, and what's the bassist, Edwards? You know, they mm-hmm. went on, and especially in the music community, what I hear from my musician friends is, just like, the name Nile Rodgers comes up a lot. It's like this guy is on every hit. This
yep.
guy writes a lot. And I pulled Get Lucky. Let me play the top of it. You can hear the similarity mm-hmm. in the rhythm section and the guitar part for how similar it sounds to what we just heard from the Diana Ross track.
Yeah, that chunky, chunky guitar. But, I mean, they worked with, like, they were on, Madonna's big album they mm-hmm. wrote and produced. Like, David Bowie, Debbie Harry. Like, they were just crushing it
Upside
in the 80s.
Upside Down was a number one hit. 1980.
Yes, yes. And Upside Down was a huge
number
hit.
One.
Yeah, like, and then now it's like, I think before this, you could say that, like, Diana Ross's, like, signature hit was probably Ain't No Mountain High Enough, but that's a crazy song to have as your signature hit as Diana Ross, because it's never going to be as famous as the Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell
right.
version. Mm-hmm. You know, that iconic beginning with the da-da-da-da-da on the snare drum. A lot of musicians will talk about that as being, like, the greatest bass line of all time. And, like, how can your signature hit be a song that's Marvin Gaye's signature hit?
Yeah,
so here with Upside Down, she finally has a number one hit that's, like, all Diana up and down.
Let me play the next little bit of the song where we finally get into the meat of this, shall we call it,
what's going on in this relationship.
Of this relationship dynamic. Okay, so far I feel great about this.
Yeah. This just sounds mm-hmm. like they're really in love.
This is just about puppy love. Mm-hmm, great.
Okay.
Sounds wonderful
love,
and intimate.
So lovely.
Yeah.
Respectfully, I say
mm-hmm.
to thee,
respectfully.
Record scratch. We swore we wouldn't use a record scratch sound, but we need one.
Respectfully, I say to thee, I'm aware that you're cheating. So here, there's a lot to break down here. Respectfully, why respectfully?
We were just cruising along. We were cruising along in a normal love song in my regular old Honda Accord. Of a love song, you give me the love I need. I cherish moments with you. Could not uh-huh. be more generic. And then she tried to slip it in. Respectfully, I'm not confronting you. No one's yelling here. I'm not raising my voice. I didn't break a dish. Respectfully, I say to thee, I'm aware that you're cheating. It has been brought to my attention.
So I'm aware of it. Who made you aware? You saw him? He told you? Respectfully, why? Like, I understand the use of instinctively is used a lot in this song, which is kind of interesting. Not a word you hear in music a lot. But then this one is just respectfully. And there's turns of phrases, right? So, like,
yes.
Upside down, you're turning me. Like, and maybe that's part
yeah.
of the lyrics. Are
I'm
upside
head over
down,
heels
so the,
in love with you is how I heard
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Respectfully, I say to thee, I'm aware that you're cheating. So this is where what?
you said the song was written like a Shakespearean sonnet, and what I did not anticipate is that you meant it included the word thee.
Yes, that's what I was saying, yeah. It uses thee a lot, which is to rhyme. We're using it to rhyme with instinctively, we're using it to rhyme with respectfully. But then she says, okay, respectfully, I say to thee, I'm aware that you're cheating. And then the next part is, but no one makes me feel like you do.
Like, it's so confusing because no one makes me feel like you do because you make me feel so great while we're together. Or it could be because you make me feel so terrible when I remember that you're cheating on me. Could really go either way.
My partner said that they felt like they always dated people where they had butterflies. And then mm-hmm. when we started dating, they were like, this is like probably one of their longest relationships, they were like, I didn't feel butterflies. But what they realized was that butterflies was anxiety.
Mm.
And that feeling upside down and feeling all confused and feeling like when you're with someone, you're just like heart is fluttering in this way is not actually love. It's actually like fight or flight.
Yeah.
So when I take this song, I think he's turning her upside down in that she's like, she's scattered. She doesn't know. She's all over the place. She's like, what's going on? And I think that because he has her so frazzled, he's just like, she's like, well, you're cheating on me, but I have these butterflies, which I think Diana Ross should realize is actually anxiety.
Everything to me is like, if you go through this stanza, it's like a bulleted list of how to describe a hostage situation. We have a major Stockholm Syndrome song here that's being played out.
Yeah.
The hostage has come around to like, okay, I get my food and water and sustenance from my captor.
Mm-hmm.
You give to me the things that I need. Thank you so much. Great leader. Mm-hmm. I cherish the moments with you. I will not say this in disrespect. Otherwise, I shall receive a beating. But respectfully, sure. I say to thee, I'm aware that you're cheating. It came in over the closed circuit TV or so it was whispered through the jail cell door or something.
Yeah.
I do like to imagine that Diana Ross just like was walking down the street, looked in the window at Studio 54. Saw some
he
shenanigans.
Was kissing someone, yeah. But she can't leave him because no one makes her feel like he does. Which, again, honey, I think is not a good thing.
No, this is triple red flags.
Huge red flags.
Right, to recreate the emotional instability you felt as a 15-year-old, feeling feelings of love for the first time, mm-hmm. and now you're 36. To recreate those feelings, you have to date literally the worst people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, I want to lay a pet theory on you that I came up with just minutes ago as we were like about to hit record here. I'm just going to take the track back like to the top of this stanza here. That little bit right there is really like unique musical gesture that you don't hear in other songs. I'm trying to make the case here that it has a thematic resonance. What we're in this key right here, G minor. So in general, you would just spend the whole song in that key, right? But every so often in songs, you would go to, we're in G minor here, you'd go to the relative major, which is the related major key that uses the same scale. So that's B flat. But what Rodgers and Edwards do here is they go to that B flat, but in the minor mode, which makes it sound really fresh and new because it's not the same scale. It's the same location that you would make the normal choice to go to from the relative minor to major, but they switch the mode to minor. And so when that happens, boom, 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 it sounds really new when she gets to that new stanza. And I was like, wow, that's a just really cool move. And all of a sudden it clicked with me, the other song that I know that does that move between minor keys, and it goes like this. And it's the other most famous abusive relationship song in the world, Phantom of the Opera.
Wow.
Case closed. I rest my case.
We knew that Niles and Bernard had influenced Queen, Debbie Harry, Madonna, but not Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Niall and Edward can do it all. That is very interesting because I'm not like a musician, so I don't notice that kind of thing. But that is that I think that theory holds. I think that she is in love with the Phantom of the Opera. And what he's cheating on her with is opera.
Yeah. I mean, what this is really making me wish is like, you know, you have this idea of like, you know, chic Diana Ross being in Studio 54, which is kind of this like subterranean disco world.
Mm-hmm, the disco dungeon.
You know, but what if there's an even more masterful disco phantom that lives underneath?
Ooh.
Underneath
Studio 54. Underneath.
I mean, look, Studio 54 was like a commercialized. We're like talking about, we're like, we want to go get a burger, and we're talking about like, you know, Five Guys. Like Studio 54 was the. you know what I mean? The more commercialized version of this. But it is interesting. I mean, this song is super long, which they were like always trying to do to like, you know, get more people on the dance floor.
Right. It's the opposite of the Spotify mentality of like keep it under 2 minutes so that you get more clicks and plays. And in their case, it's like just keep people on the dance floor. People get mad if they have to stop discoing.
And it's repetitive. You and I were talking about it when I suggested to do it as a song. I was like, well, it's kind of repetitive, but that was like the purpose, like in a good way.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that all those Chic records like Good Time get sampled by early rappers is because you can just drop the needle and let it play for like 3 minutes into a 3 minute instrumental. And then you just have to skip it back once for another 3 minutes.
You know, I didn't really think of it that way, but that's important in the sense like if we are trying to punch this song up for the here and now, well, maybe we cut it down to just the verse and, of course, get it under 230, you know. But if we're punching it up for the disco era, you need the 9 minute LP version for the DJ.
Exactly.
Three times as much
work. Exactly, for the DJ. I also, not just dancing, but also in my extensive disco research that I have been doing for months, just a hyper fixation. It was also like understood that they were keeping the songs longer for sex. Like they were keeping the songs longer so that people could just put on one record for the entire fuck session.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. You know, when you think about how long an LP would play.
Right.
Right. Just put one song on one side of the record and then you have one vibe. You get up
one
and flip
vibe
it.
The whole
you have
time.
One vibe on side A, one side on vibe on side two. You flip the record halfway through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one wants to change their rhythm.
But then here's the thing that's like, I guess they're too busy dancing and fucking to realize the song is about a horrible boyfriend.
Yeah, you're distracted. You're not paying attention to the lyrics. You just accept this as a pleasant love song. Let me play the next verse here. It's like, so far we've basically got to like, they snuck in this secret thesis. We got this one line that gives us a clue as to what is going on. Golly, when the beat hits, though, like, you're just going to dance. It's just so tasty. Like, she's the crazy one. Come on.
Those two lines next to each other make zero sense. They make no sense next to each other.
So they don't just slip in the cheating. The whole song is about him cheating. The entire song is like, I know that you play the field. I know that I'm crazy to think you're all mine. Which it kind of harkens back to another song that I love, which is Crazy by Patsy Cline, which is basically just her being like, I know that I'm nuts to think that you would just be mine. And it's very sad. And this is like kind of a flip on that where it's got the same sentiment, but it's like, yeah. No, I know. I'm bonkers to think that you would be monogamous with me. Totally crazy.
That's a good example. I always thought of like the Patsy Cline song as being sort of like summing up waspy social taboos against emotion. Just like she's having Patsy Cline's having normal emotions about a relationship, like being sad and lonely and whatever. And she's just like, I know that that's crazy. Just describing normal feelings as crazy because she's not allowed to have feelings.
That's what's happening here.
Yes.
She's like,
oh, this normal expectation that we would be in a relationship and you're all mine. That's crazy. I know I'm crazy. I know I'm the crazy one.
But then,
like, are straight people okay? It's like this thing of like, it's like when I see like my straight female friends be like, I know I'm acting so nuts towards him. And I'm like, you're acting very normal.
You're acting normal.
Extremely normal.
You're just expecting a baseline of acceptable behavior.
Exactly. So he's got charm and appeal. He's always playing the field.
Because he can.
Sure. Then thinks she's crazy that she would even, I mean, it's a little bit like, okay, it's like polyamory, but they're playing it as like, they use the word cheating and they're like, you know, like if you just took that one part, you could be like, okay, yeah. So it's kind of like they're doing some sort of like compersion polyamory kind of like thing.
Except that it's not mutual, right? She acknowledges
it's not mutual.
It can't be polyamory unless there's like an agreement in place.
It's
really.
Like polyamory.
No,
only one person agreed to
mutual,
it, which is explicitly not that.
She's also not giving herself, like, Diana Ross, you also have charm and appeal. Like, you're not giving yourself, you could also play the field.
That's so true. I didn't really look at it that way before,
yeah.
But we need a self-esteem angle on
right.
this song that's really missing. The whole song is like in the second person, you know, you're mm-hmm. doing this and that. You give love instinctively, which I'm desperate to know what that means, by the way.
I would love to talk about that in a second.
But Diana Ross should not need a friend to sit her down and be like, Diana Ross, you
listen.
Are a catch.
You
were in the Supremes. You know, you have had several number one hits.
Mm-hmm.
You're the cover of this new album. Looks like you're in a Levi's jeans ad because
I mean,
you're that hot.
She's stunning.
Yeah.
Okay.
But apparently she needed that friend.
As long as the sun continues to shine, there's a place in my heart for you. That's the bottom line.
That's the craziest part about the verse to me. Isn't the part where she's admitting that this person is cheating, that the punctuation of the verse is just sort of like, you're cheating on me, you're cheating me, you're cheating me. But of course, there's always a place for you.
Yeah.
That's the crazy part.
As long as the sun continues to shine, there's
yeah.
a place in my heart for you.
It's really harkening back to like the old Motown stuff in the middle
yeah.
of a song that is very not Motown, that's very disco.
There's a lot, actually. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, there's a lot of stuff like her song Hanging On is sort of similar too. You just keep me hanging on.
Yeah.
Similar theme. It's just like, why don't you get out of my life? It's the guy that like can't commit.
Yeah. That one at least has the realism of like, at least I think she has more understanding of her feelings. Like, just get out my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're toxic is basically what she's saying. And I'm trying to reject you. It was like here she's living with this dissonance. And what she doesn't call crazy is the fact that there's always a place in my heart for you. She calls herself crazy for thinking that she could have him to herself. No, that's the reasonable thing.
She's mm-hmm. admitting that it all makes her feel upside down, but it just sounds like this fun, coy experience. You kind of want her to be screaming, kind of like screaming
yeah.
and shaking her man, like, you're turning my life upside down.
Or maybe she just thinks she's like, again, she was using the phrase upside down to talk about her career, and then the guys from Chic sort of futzed with it. But, like, it's this idea that, like, maybe she wouldn't normally behave this way. Like, she understands that this is contradictory. She understands the song is called Upside Down. She understands that, like, being like, you're cheating on me, but there's always a spot for you in my heart. Like, the song's title lets us know that this is wacky.
Yes. Yeah. The song's title, Upside Down,
mm-hmm.
lets us know that things are not as they should be.
Yeah.
That we've gone through the looking glass in some way. I think just at
yeah.
the outset of the song, you don't know what that is.
Right. And then she goes again to instinctively, you give me the love that I need. So now what do you guys think that means? Instinctively, you give me the love that I need.
That's the thing that needs the most unpacking, or at least the most guesswork. What
instinctively, what does that mean?
Yeah, are we talking about the sexing? Are we talking about, you know, sometimes giving love in a song where, you know, it's still the 70s or 80s or whatever.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yummy, 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 I got love in my tummy. Okay, we're just talking about sex stuff, right?
Right,
so maybe
right,
she's
right,
just
right.
saying, like, you're good in bed.
Maybe that's what she's saying. And so they're just like, they were just naturally compatible?
I read it as being more like her giving him a great compliment about how perfectly manipulative he is in terms of like, you're playing the field.
Yes.
And if you were playing the field too much, I would be able to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But you instinctively know, like, maybe she needs to see this guy one night a week. Maybe she needs
mm-hmm.
to see him once a month. Maybe she needs him four nights a week.
Yeah.
And he's out playing the field three nights a week. But instinctively, he knows when to, like, come back and, like, insinuate his way back into.
Just when she's about to be done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I read it, is that it's,
yeah,
like.
Yeah, it's not about sex. It's literally about, like, the walking that line, the relationship. Just when she's about to change the locks, he shows up with Seamless on a Thursday night.
Yep.
It's about his skill at keeping her on an emotional leash. Although maybe it's just about how good he is at sex.
No,
it
no,
could
no,
be
no,
that
no.
Too.
I think you're right. Because what is that called? It's not ghosting, but it's like, is it like, what's it? You guys are married. You have no fucking idea.
I think it's called Phantoming of the Opera.
No, it's
not called
Phantoming
of the Opera.
The opera.
Yeah. It's
thing that guys do where they, is it like zombieing? where they kind of like will ghost a little, and just when you've moved on, they come back and they're like just enough.
This is almost certainly a term, but I don't know it.
It is a term.
So we should make it up. And I'm feeling it should be mini ghosting.
It's like, hold on, I'm Googling ghosting.
Geisting, like poltergeisting.
I'm hoping that it's Mike Myersing, as in like Mike Myers from Halloween.
Because
like you've run down the hallway, you've finally gotten away, and then Mike Myers pops up with a knife.
No, yes, kind of. Breadcrumbing. It's basically like this thing where like you're the guy and you're like do a little bit of a love bomb and then you like disappear and then you come back and you're like, I'm sorry, I was just depressed. But then like he was actually like fully with another girl. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, like here, you know, like, can we get a drink? And then like you're kind of back in it.
Then you pick up the breadcrumbs the fourth time. And the next thing you know, he's picking you up, taking you into his gingerbread house and throwing you in an oven.
Basically, an emotional oven.
Right. Or a sex oven in Diana Ross's case.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But even that, then you're like, oh, now you're, you know, now you're back in it. And he's like, and then he can disappear for another 2 weeks.
I do definitely imagine this all playing out like on the dance floor as.
In one night?
Yeah. Well, just that
this
they.
This takes place in one night.
I mean, probably. It was 1979, 1980.
No, I meant as like. Like a West Side Story, like the relationship plays out over months and months, but they always meet on the dance floor, like Saturday Night Fever or something like that. You know, that's where she's seeing him getting his jollies out. She's off in the corner booth witnessing his infidelity.
But then he comes over just as she's about to leave, pissed off. He comes over and is like, "Want to dance?" And she's like, "Oh, well."
Oh God!
Can't
you and
say
your,
no to you.
Oh, you and your instincts again.
In whatever outfit he's wearing, your polyester knick-knick shirts, and I can't get enough. I gotta go back or whatever.
We have nothing but repeats from here on out, and it's been too many minutes since I've heard the beat. I'm just thirsty for this beat.
One thing I'll say about the beat is this came out in 1980, and it really speaks to a pet personal theory that Evan and I have. Which I'll share here with you, okay. Gabby, which is that when you think of a decade, all the stuff that happens in the first 4 years of any decade, you imagine as having happened in the previous decade. So, like, if you looked at a picture of people in the year 1962, you'd be like, wow, great photo of the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to music from the year 1972, and it'd be like, music by the band or music by like Jefferson Airplane, you'd be like, great 60s music. I love the 60s music. No, it's from 1962. Like 1964, Frank Sinatra is still singing hits. And similarly, like if you put this on the radio, I think 98% of people would be like, this is a song that came out in the 1970s. Disco was the 70s.
Yes.
And it barely missed.
But any given decade lasts from the fourth year of the decade until the fourth year of the next decade. Like the 70s are 1974 to 1984. And I
was
you can't convince me otherwise.
This was 1980. I was surprised. But there was like things were you can't fully shake it. Like it's still bleeding in, even as much as people were like, we hate disco, blah blah blah. Like people still wanna dance. People are still gonna dance.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you think about like, oh, by the 90s, people are fully on board with the mantra that disco sucks, right? And yet, like, this song and every other Chic song would be sampled, like, 85 times. I found this, I found this example from the 90s. I thought I told you that we won't stop. And I guarantee everybody involved in this song would say that disco sucks.
Right.
But when they're ready to rock a party... That rocks your
body. Let's go. No, but...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But absolutely, like what you're talking about, Gabby, that disc, like when we were kids in the 80s and 90s, it was basically like it was like a meme that disco sucked.
Right.
But growing up,
hip hop sort of came out of disco in a lot of ways, not just like sort of the first rap songs were coming out and they were being sampled and played over disco beats.
Yeah.
Like these DJs were, you know, splicing and dicing and Frankensteining shit together. And then that they kind of like came around to, you know, around the same time, which is why when people hating on this type of music is like low-key racist, high-key racist.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, it's super, like, in the 80s and 90s when, like, as a meme, just me and all of my friends were like, disco sucks. Is you're like basically a child just repeating what has been said to you. And it's only when you look at it, like, with any level of depth, you're just like, oh, like, white people were racist and homophobic about disco, and that's why disco, which is music played on guitars and basses and drums, so maybe it's just a different kind of rock and roll, is being...
It's very interesting. Like, a lot of... And, like, Motown, too. Like, when I was reading... You know, you think... Again, you're talking about thinking about eras. When I was reading about gay clubs and gay bars in the 70s, a lot of the music that they played, you would think it would be this kind of, like, 70s disco stuff, which, like, it kind of was. But also, like, a lot of the stuff they were playing were, like, The Temptations. And, like, they were, like, looping, like, Motown songs, like, 60s Motown songs, you know, to play in, like, to dance to in the gay clubs in a way that, like, if you were making a movie about the 70s now, you'd you maybe would put this song if you weren't, like, historically accurate. But you wouldn't be like, oh, The Temptations, that's what I would put. But, like, the books that I was reading about, like, gay men dancing in the 70s, it was, like, a lot of Motown.
Like, those are the greatest love songs, basically, of all time.
I know.
You go to a wedding and you hear the songs. They make you feel such emotion. I can hardly imagine being a gay person living in a repressive society, and all of a sudden in New York City you can go to a bar where you can, where, like, you can dance with your boyfriend or your lover or stranger to, like, a Marvin Gaye song. Or, like, a,
yeah,
or a
it
Diana
was like
Ross
what
song,
they
that'd
could,
be amazing.
What the DJs could pick up and find. And then also it's like what these people liked when they were teenagers.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I was just surprised by how, like, there's this book called Dancer from the Dance that I was obsessed with, and it's like a memoir-ish fiction type thing about a gay guy in the 70s in the clubs in New York, and Law of the Land by The Temptations comes up a bunch. And I was like, that is not what I would put in my scene of the movie, you know?
Yeah.
You would put this song in your scene of the movie.
Exactly, and I would be historically inaccurate.
Yeah, you'd be thinking, like, who's, oh, Diana Ross is a gay icon or something. Like, this is what people are jamming out to. Yeah. You wouldn't think The Temptations, but, I mean, all of the above can be true, too.
One thing I was listening to here on the outro, and correct me if I'm wrong, Evan, but, like, here in the outro, the bass is really moving. It's, like, a little slappier now than it was at the beginning of the song, right?
Yeah, there's, like, a riff on the, the rhythm guitar. Bow, bow, bow.
Yeah.
It's just, so, like, adding to the ad-lib nature of this outro. Because now we've taken a couple of the lyrics. You're giving love instinctively, I say to thee respectfully. And we're just kind of jamming those. The lead vocal's riffing on it. The guitar's riffing. Just giving somebody to dance to.
Lyrically, we're, like, we're really just repeating ourselves. Or Diana Ross is just repeating herself now. But the energy is, like, still building, even just through this long outro that presumably people are either dancing or making love to on side one of their record.
Yeah, they added just a couple of elements to the outro to keep the energy going.
Oh, I love this.
I'm aware that this is an audio-only format, but one thing that the listeners are missing is how every single time... There's the final fade-out. Every single time we hit play on this track, all three of our faces really squinch up in that unmistakable kind of way that says, yeah, I'm sitting down right now, but I... prefer to be in the middle of the dance floor.
We're jamming it. We're jamming a little bit here. We're rocking.
You can't not. I mean, I'm like dancing the whole time. Like every time you hit play, I was dancing. You can't. You can't not.
Yeah, you know that stinky face. That's like either I just took something out of the fridge that I left there for 3 weeks by accident, or I heard a really great beat.
It's so amazing.
It's such a good beat. It's just and like she's great and. You know, I think like it's, I don't know if this is true, but there's always these stories of like, they didn't even like this song. And now it's number one, like with Tina Turner, again, who I read three biographies of, her own autobiographies. She hated What's Love Got to Do with It. It was a cover.
Wow.
She didn't like it. She didn't want it. And that became like the biggest, you know, whatever, one of her biggest songs. And so like what I read about this was like, oh, Diana Ross didn't even like Upside Down. She didn't want to do it. She didn't care for it. I don't know if that's true. They say that a lot. Yeah. And then it became a hit, you know?
Rodgers and Edwards.
All the way until it hit number one.
The craziest thing is Rodgers and Edwards that are like, have had great careers in the 70s as members of Chic, but like, really, this has helped breaking them out into like a wider sphere of like being, top music producers with, like I mentioned, Madonna, Blondie, David Bowie. They tried to get their names taken off this record.
Really?
Yes,
which is
they
crazy.
Did. I read that. And they tried to get their names taken off because it had been changed so much, I guess, from what they originally put together. And then she ended up leaving Motown after this record and went to a different record label. Creative people are crazy.
I listened to this, and this sounds so disco to me. Mm-hmm. But apparently the original version of this album was more disco-y than this. And she got some bad feedback from it, from like people she trusted, from DJs and like people at her label. And like I think that the disco backlash was already starting, and people were like, this is too disco. So I think she like changed, she like remixed it, she redid her vocals, she changed some tempos. I mean, like, what could be a more disco tempo than this? I'm not sure. But but Rodgers and Edwards were really mad about it and almost like took their names off. And I imagine they were quite glad that they left it off.
Something about that is so amazing to me, because what is disco if not the ultimate era of excess? Right? Disco is about being flamboyant and big and having more instruments on your record and like sparklier outfits. What possibly could have been the transgression that caused a money hungry executive to say, that's too disco? You went too far,
I really
Diana.
Don't know.
Reel it back in.
She's been amazing in every genre. Every genre. She has a new album out November 5th.
No.
Good for her.
I think what I'm putting on the top of my to-do list is what she did right before this album came out that absolutely bombed. This is like her album now. Like, it's at the top of her discography in terms of like what people love, in terms of like what sold the most. But this was right after she was in The Wiz with Michael Jackson. And
really?
I've never watched it. I'm going to go watch The Wiz. That's the top of my list now.
The Wiz is great. Yeah. You can pry The Wiz from my cold, dead hands. Well, I love The Wiz.
Apparently, she didn't like it because after she made The Wiz, she was like, guys, I need to turn my career upside down. I need to shake this up.
Whatever. I mean, I guess it's one of those sort of cult classic things. Yeah. But I always love it. I think it's great.
I think you're probably right. I think the world probably was just not ready for The Wiz, is my guess.
The world certainly was not ready for it, but it lives on as a cult classic. Like, it hasn't disappeared.
Oh, no. It's amazing.
Also, weirdly, isn't it a Sidney Lumet movie? I think Sidney Lumet directed it. I love Sidney Lumet movies. I'm crazy for him.
Yeah, I don't really know what... I mean, other than maybe racism, I'm not entirely sure. I guess, so this was like... Yeah, this was 1978 was when The Wiz came out.
And also the like racism disguised as economics. Like, well, this is for a smaller audience,
We'll put it out in cities and urban areas. You have to wonder what would happen.
I had no idea it didn't do well, but it always makes me think of one of my favorite directors is John Carpenter, and when he did the Thing, the theory is it bombed because E.T. came out the same weekend and people wanted aliens to be cute, and so they didn't care about mean aliens. So, or something, E.T. came out around that same time, and so people were like, we don't want mean aliens, we want nice cuddly aliens.
I mean, quite frankly, that could be enough of a reason regardless of whether the Thing was good or not. E.T.'s just so big that you can't watch another movie.
It was huge, yeah. And so then later, obviously, The Thing became like a huge classic and like everyone loves it. I remember I saw an interview with John Carpenter where someone was like, isn't this so like crazy that aren't you so happy that it became like a cult classic or whatever? And he was just like, no, because I didn't make any money.
Yeah. When someone says that something is a cult classic, they mean that there is no audience and no money.
Yeah, so I think if you ask the people involved in The Wiz, be like, isn't it amazing how much it became such a cultural? They'd be like, we didn't make any, we actually, like, our careers floundered and we didn't make any money. So, no, doesn't do us any good.
Oh, cult classic is the biggest backhanded compliment. It's the biggest complicit.
You have to wonder what would have happened if they'd made The Wiz in, like, 1985 after Michael Jackson was already a star, or a bigger star. But I guess, you know what? Yeah. He's not making The Wiz in 1985. He's too busy. He's too busy doing other stuff.
She's great in it. You should watch The Wiz for Diana Ross. She's great in it.
When we come back with The Punch, I promise you that I'm going to have that additional piece of homework done. I will have watched The Wiz, and we can chat about The Wiz. But I think we have our work cut out for us here, focusing on Upside Down as an anthem to Stockholm Syndrome. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of already
and,
is.
And two, I think you're right, Andrew, that it is like breadcrumbing. It is like he comes back around just at the right moment when she's about to leave.
That's what we're deducing. We don't know the specifics of what is this magic that he's working. What is the spell that he's cast here?
I know exactly what it is, and it's the text that reads simply, "You up?"
Yep.
That's it.
Something like that.
Once every 4 to 8 days, just a text that says, "You up?"
Yep.
Oh man, especially if he's texting in 1980, then he's really ahead of the
curve. Yeah, I mean, Diana Ross probably had a car phone even in 1980, right? She's that cool and that rich.
Mm-hmm. She's on a CD.
Then she says, writes back, respectfully, I am up.
Respectfully, I say to thee,
I am up.
Dost thou call on my booty? Thank you so much, Gabby. We will be back in just a moment with The Punch. Okay, we're back from the break with a punch up. Gabby, are you ready to hear this thing?
Yeah, I'm really ready. I caught a glimpse of the lyrics and I'm already tickled. So.
It's been a little longer than we usually do. It's been about 2 or 3 months.
It took us a minute.
I feel like you have maybe thought of us twice in that 3 month period, like once just randomly, like, oh, those guys, we know each other. And maybe once when we emailed you, we've been thinking about you at least 5 times a week, I would say, while we work on this. And it's been quite pleasant.
Oh, it has been. I thought you were going to be like, we hate you. This took so long. Why did you do this to us?
No, this is really fun because it was very, very specific, I think you'll see.
Okay.
And just to refresh your and maybe the listener's memory, if they took a break, I think, you know, we talked about two major things that inspired this punch up during our conversation 3 months ago. One was toxic relationships, breadcrumbing, ghosting, just being a jerk in general.
The song is very problematic, and yet we don't know a lot about what this guy's doing that is keeping the relationship together. There's not very many specifics. So to me, that's a big missed opportunity and something we really wanted to punch up, add some specifics.
And the other thing was we noted that Nile Rodgers and all his creative genius was using a chord progression rarely heard in pop music that we recognize from being from Phantom of the Opera.
So that unlocked it.
That unlocked it. So I think. Oh, and you know, the one other thing I'll say, as a mea culpa, we've been doing at the beginning of episodes corrections from previous episodes. We've been getting in some notes from listeners, things we screwed up.
And what are you about to drop?
I think this is going to be the first ever mid-episode correction.
Oh, go on.
Listening back to our record, I realized that quite often I was referring to Nile Rodgers as Niles. That's not his name.
No, Nile.
It's Nile Rodgers, and also for everyone listening out there, great Instagram follow.
Wow, he
rollerblades. He hangs out with Debbie Harry. Just wow.
You made him pretend British.
Niles Rodgers.
Yes. Niles Rodgers. He's
Niles Rodgers is the prime minister from like 45 years ago. Nile Rodgers is a very cool musician.
He's a funky dude.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the punch.
I said upside down, you're turning me from the rafters, laughing cryptically. Round and round, you're spinning me. Upside down, boy, you trapped me in the opera catacombs, underground. Upside down, the phantom snapped me in his gondola, paddled underground. Instinctively, you cry for me. The
chromatic steps up.
I cherish my duets with you. Respectfully, I say to thee, you're a bloodthirsty lunatic, but no one makes me sing like you do. Up and down, the aria you wrote me really fits my voice. Who's the angel now? Upside down, boy, you turn me from a chorus girl to the top of the town. I know you keep your face concealed because of some deformity, but the real red flag here is your mind. You kidnapped me, but I may agree to be your emo goth bride. Stockholm syndrome's real, that's the bottom line. Upside down, you gaslit me, your organ playing sucks. What
What a real ass clown. I said nice things so you wouldn't kill me. You're spilling too
wet
on my evening gown. I said upside down, you're turning me from the rafters laughing cryptically. Round and round, you're spinning me with a mob approaching lividly. Upside down, you're turning me. Thought I'd never escape captivity. Round and round, breadcrumbing me. Is this how you get women typically? Upside down, you're turning me. Playing your organ irresistibly. Round and round, gaslighting me. Loving me so toxically. Upside down, you're turning me. Mobs waving torches pyrotechnically. Round and round, abducting me to your unholy ossuary. Upside down.
Anytime, any day, you can even say the word ossuary is a good
day. Okay, I have so many questions. Who's singing that?
I have kind of a hack, which is
an ace in the hole.
And I have an ace in the hole, which is my wife, who's a great singer. So I just twisted her arm and I said, you know, a couple weeks ago we did a Kelly Clarkson song, and I just really wanted to sing it, and it was fine. I think. Maybe people hated it, but I just did it. But this week, it just did not work unless it was a woman's voice singing the Diana Ross bit. So,
and being captured by the Phantom of the Opera. It's got to be a Christine.
It's got to be a Christine.
She did a great job. Your wife did a great job. I love that this fully became about the Phantom of the Opera, which I think made finally the woman's specific problems with her boyfriend pop. You know what I mean? Like, we get it.
Yes.
We get what's going on.
It brought it into focus.
Yeah. We understand what's going on. We see why she's upset. There's a lot of plot.
If she breaks up with him, she loses her artistic edge.
Yeah. I liked the use of pyrotechnically. That was very good for me. I can't believe how much Phantom of the Opera you managed to get in there.
I will say, we were already talking about what a crazy time the 80s was, just talking about the song Upside Down. Mm-hmm. But you don't truly realize what a crazy time the 80s was until you go read the plot summary of the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, Phantom of the Opera. And you're like, this is the opera that people liked? Musical. This is the musical people liked? Just about a kidnapping and murders? Yeah. And like, it's an organ solo? What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really great. I liked the real red flag here is your mind. That's really good. She did a great job sort of mimicking Diana Ross's voice, too.
I can't believe I'm just going to be passing on these compliments third hand. I should have had her here in the room while we were recording so she could accept these plaudits.
No, I wanted to praise her publicly on this podcast. I can't believe how, I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but I can't believe how much of this is just the plot of Phantom of the Opera. I feel like Diana Ross herself could not have predicted how this would have gone. Yeah. Andrew Lloyd Webber himself could not have been probably more impressed. I feel like that man isn't often impressed.
There was a single clue in the original song between these chords that pointed the way to Phantom. But once we overlaid the two, yeah. The original story of this actual Stockholm Syndrome situation where there's a kidnapping. Once we overlaid that with the original song, we're like, these actually match exactly.
Gaslighting, breadcrumbing, you know, all the stuff was used.
It's all the therapy buzzwords are there, uh-huh. Just waiting.
I was going to say, I enjoyed your spilling sewage on my evening gown because I feel like, okay, hear me out. Lyrics, I like when lyrics are so specific and like don't, and like it's like, you know, you can write a love song that's like, baby, I love you, blah, blah, blah. But what makes Taylor Swift good, what makes like, you know, Joni Mitchell good are like these really weird specifics that are in all of the songs. Spilling
totally
sewage
agree.
On my evening gown is like so clouds in my coffee, Carly Simon. Like, it's just this very specific type of songwriting that I enjoy where you're like,
right.
I don't
like,
know
do
exactly.
You get
I wasn't
deja
in that
vu.
Exact. Yeah, like I wasn't in that exact situation, but like I get it, girl. Like emotionally, mentally, I get it.
It's basically
exactly as evocative and emotive as when Joni sings on the back of a cartoon coaster in
exactly.
a blue TV screen light. Exact mm-hmm. same situation,
yes.
really,
mm-hmm.
for Joni and
for you guys.
Christine. I will say sometimes the song you start and you're just writing what you expected. And this one kind of went in a different direction than I expected at the end and the outro, which, you know, I felt like Christine had a life of her own here. And I found it to be a little bit more emotionally hopeful for her than maybe it even was for Diana Ross in the original song, because she's really trapped. She's just going upside down. She keeps coming back. We're here. I didn't expect this, but there's kind of a hint in here that maybe it was all an act. Maybe she's just pretending she had Stockholm Syndrome to keep the Phantom happy until the angry mob arrived.
Well, that's a major punch up.
Major.
To get out of the feedback loop. Get out of there.
And I like that she's pretending. Part of her is pretending, waiting for the mob to come, because that's a scary situation I think a lot of women can relate to, is being like, I'll just keep him happy so he doesn't do whatever weird like phantom thing he's thinking of doing.
Mm-hmm. Some demonic ritual. And
yeah.
yet, who's going to save you? A mob waving torches. That's not great either.
No, you know, and often women are between a rock and a hard place. And that's, you know, that's why we need feminism.
We wrapped it up with a nice moral.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about the delightful specifics of the song Deja Vu, where they only listen to the song Uptown Girl.
Yes, exactly. I was going to mention Olivia Rodrigo. Yes, that they love the song Uptown Girl. Yeah, like specifics like that are great. One of my favorite lines from her is in God, It's Brutal Out Here, when she says, I can't even parallel park. I'm like, I guess
no.
So.
No, it's like a callback to driver's
She's
license.
She's still worried about yeah. getting her driver's license.
You know, like you got existential crisis. It's high school. I got an existential crisis and you got to pass your driver's test. I get it.
Wow.
But I was going to say, so Diana Ross was in The Wiz, which is like a black reimagining of The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm,
so what if she could come and be in a black reimagining of The Phantom of the Opera? I don't know if they've ever done that or thought about doing that, but that's just like a little studio exec idea. If somebody wants to get Diana Ross on the horn.
Okay,
I love it.
With
you're
you,
a podcaster,
with you.
You're a writer, you're an entrepreneur.
But wild pitch.
What?
Diana Ross is the Phantom.
Whoa!
Yes.
You know,
yes,
she's the right
yes.
age to be the Phantom. She's been in the catacombs for
yes.
70 years.
Yes.
She's got the mask on, but you know she's beautiful
yes.
underneath.
Absolutely.
Just fully gender swapped Phantom of the Opera.
I agree.
Okay, great. We'll get right on that. I'll call our agents. You call your agents.
I'm walking over to Broadway right now with this written down on a legal pad.
We'll talk in 3 months.
Perfect.
Gabby, thank you so much for coming on, and we will be back in one moment with walk-in music.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
Okay, we close the show, Gabby, with a segment we call walk-in music, in which we envision a scene of your choosing, and you tell us what song you'd like to play when you're walking into that scene.
Hey, yeah, and what the scene is. It could be any scene you want.
This was so hard for me because I wrote down like a million answers because I have like so many. Like I used to want, now I came out as non-binary, but I used to want Evil Woman to play at my funeral. Like there was a lot happening
yeah.
there.
I mean, even as someone identifying non-binary, you are still allowed to play Evil Woman. You
Evil
can still,
Woman.
Yes.
I think it really speaks to me, but I wanted to go with the disco theme that we have, and I wanted to shout out someone lesser known than Diana Ross, so I went with Shame by Evelyn Champagne King, which is a really great song, a disco song, and, you know, I thought about doing something with Tina Turner, I thought about doing another Diana Ross, Donna Summer something, but, like, I think this is a name that I have not heard as much outside of like the specific disco scene. So I also love the idea that they were like, Evelyn King is too boring. Let's add Champagne as your middle name.
Yes.
Which was like a note from a producer.
Yes. You have two normal names. So we're going to jam this random
so
noun.
So what's our scene? Before we start spinning up the song, what's the scene? What's the scene you're walking into, Gabby?
I don't know. Like it's my walk-in music of like going into the nightclub and I'm dressed up really nice.
Okay.
And I'm like walking in, surveying.
Okay.
I think
great.
It would be like playing in the background.
What's
yes.
It's a really solid disco song.
Nightclub is absolutely a place where you need walk-in music. Here it is, Shame.
I just have a quick follow-up question, which is, how tall are your shoes as you're walking into this club?
Extremely at all.
Okay, okay. I just needed to make sure. That's what I had in my head, but I wanted to make sure I was following along with the spirit and the letter of your scene.
There's no, when that snare first claps, the sound of the snare is platform stilettos.
Yup. Boots, big boots.
I mean, that's kind of the thing about so much disco music at this tempo, though, is the perfect, all of it is just the perfect music to walk into a club to. Just be like strutting in with your shoulders going, because like it really gets your shoulders going because you got to walk fast to keep up with this, you know?
Camera shows the whole, you know, camera shows everybody dancing from above.
Yeah, you go to the bird's eye angle as soon as this sax hits, and you can see the crowd swirling. But they part just a little bit as Gabby enters the fray. Oh, here's the lyric.
Similar theme to Upside Down, too.
Yeah, sometimes I think I'm going insane. Disco era has some complicated infidelity, I'm finding out.
The 70s, baby!
A time of self-discovery. Okay, on behalf of the Gregorys, I brought a song this week. My scene is, let's say I'm an emotionally distant and possibly abusive boyfriend, and I'm let's say I'm breadcrumbing my girlfriend.
Okay. You know,
respectfully,
she's aware that I'm cheating.
Yeah, this is a new scenario for me to wrap my head around, but I'll try.
Just hypothetically, try to imagine this scenario. Perhaps she knows that I'm cheating.
Perhaps she knows that you're cheating, respectfully.
Yeah. Respectfully, but instinctively, is what happens.
No.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I have this uncanny instinct, you see. I have this instinct of just when to swoop back in, just when she's feeling lonely and she's finally ready to maybe break up with me.
Right.
And then I burst in the door.
Wow. Now I have a follow-up question, Evan, which is, in this scenario, has your face been terribly burned by acid? Do you own a gondola?
Well, no one knows if my face has been burned because I wear a mask. I also picked this song, which I deeply love. Love Like This by Faith Evans. Just because it slaps and it guarantees to get everyone on the floor 100%. But how does it do that? What is the secret? They sampled a song by Nile Rodgers. This song samples a different song by Chic. And that's why it just works. That's why it's on fire.
Wow.
Right from the drop. And I guarantee, as soon as I undo the deadbolt and step into our fourth floor walk-up...
Oh, she gave you the key.
She is taking me back. She's taking me back. When you strut into this one.
I love this era, too. I was very close to choosing for my walk-in music "The Jump Off" by Lil' Kim.
Yes, great pick. Okay, well, you're coming back for another episode just so
we can
play that.
I almost chose that for us to go through, but it's so many lyrics and there's a lot to unpack there.
This week we had like extremely, I'll call it UWPM, very low unique words per minute.
Right.
In this track,
right.
Upside Down.
And the Jump Off has a lot of really choice lines, but it's a lot quickly.
Yes. High density track, that one.
Uh-huh.
Consider that a cliffhanger for the next time you join us on Punch Up the Jam. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Gabby, it's just been a unique pleasure.
If you haven't checked it out already, go check out their podcast, Bad With Money, because it gives you ideas about how to spend your money responsibly, instinctively.
Respectfully.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up. The jam, punch it up. Get the party going. Punch up the jam, punch it up.
was a HeadGum Original.